When Lori Gottlieb opened her psychotherapy practice last year, she thought that she would have a steady stream of clients, but that didn't happen. And then she discovered that many of her colleagues faced with a similar problem are now marketing their services and rebranding them as life coaching in an effort to attract more clients. She wrote about whether psychotherapy has an image problem in her article called What Brand Is Your Therapist?, which appeared in the November 23rd issue of the New York Times Magazine. And she joins me now. Lori, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
How has the field of psychotherapy changed over the last 20 years that a new therapist would even be faced with this kind of problem?
Right. Well, I think one of the things that a lot of us don't learn in graduate school is that a lot of what we're going to be doing has to do with how we present ourselves in terms of marketing and out in the commercial marketplace. And I think that for my supervisors, for example, they didn't deal with this in the same way because the internet wasn't around in the way that it is now. So they were never asked to put up websites, tweet, do Facebook, blog, all of that stuff that a lot of us are really uncomfortable with.
But what about just changing attitudes? Has the increasing use of prescription drugs to treat depression and mood disorders played a role in these changes? Are people afraid of entering into a treatment that will take a long time?
Right. I think that a lot of people are expecting unrealistic results in a short period of time. So a lot of people, their expectations for happiness are perhaps a little bit skewed. How quickly they should feel better after they've had maybe a lifetime of low self-esteem or self-doubt. It's not really realistic. And I think that our job as therapists is to help people accept their limitations for the most part, whereas there's this other cultural idea that, they should find a way around their limitations. And the fact is, if you do have these limitations, as everybody does, it just leads to frustration and more unhappiness if you think that you're somehow supposed to surpass these limitations or get rid of these limitations, whereas we really want to help people, of course, do the best that they can in life, but also not always be yearning for something that is out of their reach.
So how do you rebrand yourself? On the internet? You can't just put ads on the subway a la Dr. Zizmore because you're in L.A.
Well, that's another thing, our scope of practice and our area of practice. What a lot of people are doing, and I think it's frustrating to a lot of us who have gone through all of this graduate school and internship training, is that there, people who don't have any training or have minimal training can just hold out a shingle and call themselves coaches. And they can practice anywhere. They don't have any limitations in terms of, ethical standards or guidelines. So they can just call themselves a life coach, and people can call them from all over the world, and they can kind of like Peanuts, Lucy and Peanuts, they can kind of just give advice.
The doctor
but that's
is
not
in.
What we're about.
Yeah, but Lucy was a scary
a
therapist. you spoke to Casey Truffo, a branding consultant who works with therapists. What did she suggest you do?
She had a lot of suggestions, and I think she's really smart, and a lot of people do go to her for this very reason, because it's really hard to find people who will come for long-term therapy nowadays. So she has a lot of ways for people to kind of bridge that gap between people's fear of sort of coming in for long-term therapy and how we position ourselves. So when she was at a networking event, for example, she had written psychotherapist on her name tag and nobody was interested in talking to her. But at the next networking event, she wrote happiness locator. Ugh. And all of these people wanted to come see her. And she wasn't really doing anything different in her treatment. It just brought people in the door.
I don't know why that the second would appeal to me less, but another consultant suggested that your website include what she called connecting questions and taglines like "Find your way back to love." Is that the way that you can appeal to a specialized population?
A lot of people say that people want to see the therapist who really specializes in what their issue is. So if you're having, problems with your spouse, there'll be questions on your website. Are you having trouble feeling heard by your partner? Those kinds of things. And then I look at life coaches' site, and they say things like, make your life a masterpiece. well, who can really do that? I can't make somebody's life a masterpiece. I can't make my own life a masterpiece. Why would I be able to do that for somebody else? But these are all branding strategies. And another branding strategy that's really off-putting, I think, to a lot of us in the field is this idea of self-disclosure, that we need to talk about our personal lives so people will feel that we get their situation. So I think that's problematic. I know there was one therapist who was blogging about how she was pregnant, she was having a boy, and she was really worried about that because she had no idea how to take care of a boy. Now, I'm a mom of a boy, so if I were looking for a therapist, I personally would not go to see that person because I think, how can that person help me if, you know, I'm the parent of a boy and she doesn't even know how to take care of her own?
But that goes against all of the original concepts of what psychotherapy is, doesn't it? The therapist did not talk much about his or her personal life. And I would think that some doctors might worry that this sort of thing might cheapen what they've been trained to do.
Exactly, exactly. And I think part of it is not that we're going to be talking about our personal lives in the therapy room. It's more about the way that we present ourselves in our marketing. So if you are a child of divorce, if you lost your parent when you were young, if you're gay, if you are a single parent, any of these things that might appeal to a specific demographic that you want to bring in, you might disclose that on your website. Whereas traditionally, we didn't disclose anything about our personal lives. We were more about the tabula rasa. We were going to be this blank slate. People would transfer unconscious feelings onto us. We would get information about them based on that interaction that happens in the therapy room. And it was very different. Now people Google you before they even make an appointment with you, and they will try to find whatever they can find about you. So people say it's better that you put out the information you want there rather than they're going to Google you and find things they otherwise you otherwise might not want them to find.
So are people these days rejecting the old concept of psychotherapy, whether or psychoanalysis, whether it's Freudian or Jungian or Adlerian or Gestalt or any of the other schools?
Well, what I found is that a lot of people will call and they'll want this other thing called, you know, coaching or consulting services. They want something that's short-term, that's very solution-focused. And in some cases, I think that's good for people. But I think in a lot of cases, people who really need the longer-term work and really need to understand why they keep getting in these patterns, why they keep repeating these dynamics in all spheres of their lives, whether it's their relationships, their work, you know, their work situation, their family relationships, their friendships, why does that keep happening? And if you just kind of focus on this sort of superficial area, in the short term, they might see some improvement, but in the long term, they're really not going to get unstuck in the way they want to get unstuck.
I'm talking to Laurie Gottlieb. Her article, What Brand Is Your Therapist?, appeared in the November 23rd issue of the New York Times magazine. Laurie, you were a writer before you went to graduate school. Were there parts of the branding that Casey Truffaut was suggesting that were similar to what you heard from people when you were writing?
Yeah, as a writer, I think a lot of writers were resistant to this in the beginning, too. You know, as writers, it's a very sort of solitary profession, and all of a sudden we were asked to do blogs and do media and all of that to publicize our books. And at the same time, I became more comfortable with that because I understood it as a commercial enterprise. But there's something about therapy that feels very intimate and very personal in a way that goes beyond even the writer's work of being intimate and personal. And it makes so many of us uncomfortable. In fact, one of the reasons that I liked doing therapy was that it was so different from the world of you know, going out and publicizing books. It was something that happened between two people in a room where there was no technology, there was nothing about branding, advertising, or marketing. It was just about this very real, authentic interaction that happened in this room where people's lives became better over time through this very private process.
And then you learned that you were wrong.
I still believe that. I still think, and I still see that happen with you know, my own work. But I do feel like bringing people in the door is different. People will really want to know a lot of information about you before they even make that first appointment.
Andrew from Manhattan writes in asking, doesn't the cost of long-term therapy have something to do with why people are hesitant to engage in real long-term therapy?
I think that's a great question. Therapy has always been expensive. And I think that, you know, in our country, at least given our healthcare system, and I think that people were willing to pay for therapy in the past because they saw the value. And now they think that, well, if I can get medication and it's only going to cost me, you know, one very expensive psych visit and then the cost of the medication itself and then a few follow-ups, I would rather do that. Plus, it's easier and you don't have to deal with the hassles of parking and getting there and going every week and feeling those feelings every week. I can see the appeal of that, but the research shows that a combination, especially for people who are depressed or have long-term anxiety issues, that the combination of medication and talk therapy is actually most effective.
Now, why did you... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask, why did you decide to start offering services as a consultant? Is that any different from life coaching?
It's not that different. So it's not therapy. And I, you know, it was a branding specialist who said to me, look, you need to diversify. You can't survive if you just want to do this long-term therapy and not have a specific niche. So I was either going to have to specialize and have a specific niche so all those people would come to me, whether it's couples or eating disorders or fertility issues, whatever my niche would be. And I didn't want to narrow it that way because I like dealing with a broad range of cases. And the other part of it was that if I wasn't going to do that, then I should do this short-term thing. And so I started doing that, and it's still one of the more popular services that more people will call me for that than they will for the long-term therapy.
So what is the real difference between coaching and psychotherapy? And one of the things that confuses me a bit here is that there's always been family therapy, couples therapy. Mm-hmm. Is that any different from what we're talking about here?
No, couples and family therapy is part of therapy. What with the coaching and consulting might be, somebody calls in and they say, you know, I'm confused about whether I should stay with my boyfriend. And they have one session with you on the phone, and you kind of help them try to clarify what their ambivalence is about.
So this is a results-oriented approach.
Right, and you're not getting into sort of their history, family dynamics in any real way. You can't really do that in 50 minutes. It's very different.
So does it also create expectations that you can help solve whatever problem the client is coming to you with?
It does, and I think, too, that the onus of the solution is on the coach. So I'm there to solve it in the coaching situations. And in the therapy situation, I'm there to help somebody else solve their own situations, to find solutions to their own situations. And I think that in the long term, that helps people much more than having somebody else come in and say, you know, here, let me help you solve this.
We mentioned earlier that there are things that you can say as a life coach that you couldn't say as a therapist. Does it work the other way? Are there things you can't say as a life coach or a consultant that you could say as a therapist?
Absolutely. You have 50 minutes and you cannot start opening up areas with people and then leave them at the end of 50 minutes and say, see ya. It just doesn't work. So you have to be really careful. You can't get into things that might be really valuable to explore because you don't have a relationship with this person. You might actually do harm by starting to talk about things that might be raw or painful that they're not ready to talk about in that 50-minute session.
Well, as a life coach, do you see these people as your clients or have they become customers?
They're customers. They're not clients in the same way.
And is this just as satisfying or satisfying in a different way?
I think it's satisfying in a different way. It's nice to know that, in therapy, we have a lot of tissue boxes in our offices. And I think that it can be hard. And also it's very fulfilling when people, you know, when couples reconnect, when people start to feel better in the world and see different results in the world. But I think that, you know, talking to somebody for 50 minutes and they're feeling like, oh, I understand that better and I feel more clarity on that. You know, it's satisfying in a certain way, but kind of in the way that, fast food might be satisfying. It's satisfying in the moment, but I don't know how satisfying it is in the long term.
One therapist calls herself a happiness locator, and she got a lot of referrals as a result. Now, not all of these things are face-to-face, as in traditional therapy. Don't people also communicate through the Internet?
Well, that's what's starting now. So a lot of therapists are starting to do, you know, not only Skype and phone therapy, but they're doing IM therapy. And I was very skeptical of that. And the person who explained it to me said, well, this way, you know, if you go to a therapy session, you might forget 30 minutes later something very helpful that your therapist said, but now you actually have a transcript of it. I haven't done it, so I'm you know, speaking hypothetically here, but I would find that, I think, very hard to do IM therapy. I think the relationship that happens in the room is so integral to the effectiveness of the treatment.
Well, how can you possibly read nuance on instant messaging or gauge a client's reaction to one of your questions?
Well, that's the thing. So you miss all of the subtle cues that you get in the room. You miss, you know, the eyebrow that goes up. You miss the smile through the painful story. You miss the foot that's shaking while they're saying they're really not anxious. You know, you miss a facial expression in response to something that you're saying. So you miss a lot of things that are really helpful that people don't get out in the real world. Their friends aren't going to comment on that, but a therapist is trained to know, oh, here's something that we might want to, that might give us a clue as to what's going on with you.
There have been over 500 comments on your story on the Times website so far. Are you surprised by how much discussion this topic has generated?
I'm pleased by it because I feel like it's something that it's a conversation that needs to happen. I think that a lot of therapists were sort of a discreet bunch and we don't really talk about this. And mostly I've heard from, you know, therapists at all stages of their career talking about how this new world of marketing has affected them. And I think it's a really important conversation because a lot of people are wondering what this means for the future of therapy.
And what happens? We lose that whole idea of open-ended therapy where it's the 15th session that suddenly the patient reveals something that is really important but couldn't say it right away.
Well, that's true. A lot of people will come in for one issue, ostensibly, and then you realize a little bit down the line that actually there's this other thing that they really wanted to work on, or maybe they didn't even know that. They thought that that issue was really their issue, but then it turns out that there's this other thing that is huge, and they really needed to talk about it, but they weren't ready to really think about that until, you know, 10 sessions in.
Laurie Gottlieb's article, What Brand Is Your Therapist?, was in the New York Times Magazine on November 23rd. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.